Hello, this is your host, Craig Faust, with Mental Health Insights. Just a quick word before the show. I want to let you know that the audio quality of this episode isn't quite as good as it normally is, and that's completely my fault. I did not have the appropriate mic settings whenever we recorded this episode, and normally I'd just get rid of the episode if that was the case. However, the content of this episode, my interview with Sarah Wilson, was so informative that I feel like the content is really good, that you can hear us. There's just a slight echo in the background. And I think that if you're able to give it a listen and you can stand to have that little bit of echo in the background, then you'll find this episode as informative as I did. And I think that you'll really enjoy it. So if you're able to do that and you're able to bear with that, then I hope that you're able to enjoy this episode. Thank you. Welcome to Mental Health Insights. My name is Craig, and I'm here with Kristen, and today we have with us Sarah. So this is a really cool opportunity. Sarah works with different, you work with dogs, right?
I work with dogs. I primarily work with families. I also do some service dog work, but it's my work with families because I walk smack into family systems. I go right into the home. And whatever's going on with the dog, it is influenced by what's going on with the family.
So this is such a unique thing because in the St. Louis area, we have a lot of therapists that work with dogs like in the office, mm-hmm. where people come in and they have a dog in the office. It feels like from what you're saying and even just hearing you talk outside of us doing this interview just a couple minutes before we were getting ready, mm-hmm. that you take a very different approach to it. Especially like even going in the home and seeing, the dog and then seeing the family and the way that they're interacting. So first things first, can you just tell me a little bit about what got you into this line of work, or what kind of made you decide like, okay, I'm going to go into the home, I'm going to see this and really see the full dynamic, even though you might be going into the home and actually paying particular attention to the dog?
I'm paying particular attention to everything going on to see what I can shift to help the dog mesh with that family. I see my world as being primarily adjusting everybody's brain chemistry, but I don't say that because that would make no sense to anybody. Nonetheless, that's what I'm doing. And why I got into it was a ruptured appendix back in the mid-80s, and I almost died. And I thought, if I almost died, I should be doing something I really love. At the time, I was working on 5th Avenue and 57th and Art Gallery. And I quit that and went full time into my side gig, which was dog training. And I've always been involved with animals, started out with horses years ago. But I've been doing it full time since then, and always word of mouth.
Always word of mouth. That's impressive. It's always impressive because that means that your clients were happy with you. I want to talk about what you said is like, I'm working on trying to change everyone's brain chemistry. Can you talk to me just a little bit about that part and what you mean by that?
Absolutely. So if a dog is being too pushy or too assertive, and that's the behavior constellation I'm looking at is based on that, then I want to adjust things in the relationship to shift them to a more social, softer, tail waggy level. If they're shy and overly sensitive, then I want to shift the dog to a more assertive, confident level. And dogs, unlike people, but like infants, but dogs, their behavior and their brain chemistry is linked. So if I change their behavior to a confident behavior, they must feel more confident. Makes it very easy. And it can work that way with people to some extent too, which is why people say, right, smile when you're on the phone, because yeah. People, all right. So it's the same sort of thing. So I'm adjusting the behaviors to change the brain chemistry to create the sort of bond that people want. And my goal is to be in and out. I'm normally in for just a few sessions. People are happy, I'm out the door. It's a very bad business model in the sense of getting recurrent income, but it's a very good word of mouth model.
Yeah. So one of the cool things about this is I like the idea of you're working on changing the brain chemistry. And like while you're working with the dog, your work with the dog actually adjusts and changes how everyone else is in the family.
I'm wondering if you could talk with me just a little bit about that. Like, I'm trying to kind of like form a picture in my head.
Right.
I'm like, whenever you walk into a family room and you see the dog, and you may see the family, give me a sense of what kind of transformations you start to see happen in the family as you work with.
Well, that is the tricky part because I view our society as being an oxytocin deprived society, and we are social animals and we're meant to be interacting and getting oxytocin, which makes us feel better and we're more social and we're happier and we're less depressed, all those good things.
So let me slow you down there. So
Yes.
for anyone that doesn't really know what oxytocin is kind of dubbed the bonding neurochemical. And it is, there are huge amounts of it that are released at certain points in our life, which we may go to in different episodes. But for us, whenever we're feeling close and safe and secure with someone, that's when our oxytocin is being released. And it's very much like serotonin in the fact that it offers stabilization, but it goes beyond that. And the fact that it offers us that safe connection and our and it widens our ability to actually be vulnerable and open with others.
Yeah, we tend to trust more. It lowers pain if you have chronic pain, which is why so many people with chronic pain love having dogs. So the neat thing for me is that when people are getting that from the dog's getting that from the people. Their oxytocin levels are being raised as well. But if somebody's primary source of oxytocin is the relationship they have with the dog, getting that to adjust is the tricky part of my work. The dog will adjust, but asking someone to back off of that. So I really have to frame it in a way that engages, gets buy-in from the client.
So let me make sure that I'm on the same page with you. If someone is, they're with their dog and they're like really, really close with their dog,
Which is standard, right? That is who pays my.
So you might be like, okay, you need to back off a little bit and allow the dog to. I see that you two are kind of laughing.
Yeah, we're laughing because she's seen me with my dog and we're slightly enmeshed, but I'm okay with that.
Right,
And so
exactly.
is she.
I love that word, slightly enmeshed.
I'm
So
aware.
whenever we
Back
use the
off.
word enmeshment, I want you to almost think of like it is whenever the there is so much overlapping. I, for some reason,
Think
I
of
think about
Velcro.
Velcro, or I think of like a basket that's made
Woven.
together where things are like over top of each other and they're very close. And traditionally, it used to be thought a long time ago that that's really secure and that's really good. But a lot of times, whenever people say there's too much enmeshment, that means you're too close.
Too much of a good
You're
thing.
so close that you're kind of actually suffocating growth of the relationship and everything. So I just want to make sure that people know that term or anything
Yeah.
like that. So you were a little enmeshed.
So who we're talking about is my dog Piper, who I use in therapy sessions with me at
And
work.
has actually been in here whenever we recorded some episodes, if I
Yeah.
recall.
Usually people are surprised when they don't see her with me, and I do have clients that get very upset if she's not in the office, but I give her breaks. But I noticed that Piper, my border collie, is not as enmeshed with me as I'd like her to be, but I'm okay with
That is
that.
who she is.
Yeah.
And my rule is if the dog doesn't have a problem with it and the person doesn't have a problem with it, then I don't have a problem with it. That
Right.
doesn't, the only time I need to adjust things is when there is a behavior that's causing an issue in the
Right.
household.
That's what you come in and do. But you
Yes.
also can make a lot of sense. Like you can understand a person by looking at the relationship between them and their dog. And I think that's really cool. Like you probably already know a whole lot about me given my relationship with Piper.
Well, it's like any counseling situation. We all know, but people are always afraid I'm being judgy about it, and I never am. It's just information that allows me to be more effective, which is how, because boy, I'm fully human. I expect everyone else to be fully human, so I
Well,
don't judge on that.
what I think is so cool about this is normally, if you're talking about a clinical situation, for us therapists or doctors or whatever, whenever they're looking at someone, they're answering questions, they're seeing how they're responding to them, and they're asking about all these different relationships. whenever you actually go into their home and you see how they're interacting with their dog, you're getting a live reading. You know, it's like someone that
with
goes
no
out.
No filter.
Yeah, it's like someone that goes out and checks your electric usage by
right.
checking the meter on your house. It's like, oh, I know how much electricity you've been using.
Right.
Except you get a lot more information from that, it sounds like.
I get a ton of information, and the dogs report everything. That's something I don't generally share, but they'll tell you everything about how boundaries are set in the household, how secure they feel in the relationship. I get all that feedback, and that gives me information on where I should start honing in. What should I adjust first? Because I try going in and try to go between 3 and 5 things, closer to 3 every time, very specific. I work the dog with it, the client works the dog with it, and then I let them roll with that for a little bit, and then I come back and make the next adjustments until everybody's happy, and then I'm out. So that's generally how I go in, but that's what I'm looking at, is how the dog relates, how the people relate, and then what needs to be shifted.
Okay. So whenever you're doing these shifts, give me a sense of how is that changing the brain chemistry? How is that changing the oxytocin levels?
Ooh, okay. So that's fine. So I have...
Get a little more into the sciencey stuff.
The sciencey thing. So I have 4 basic things I do with the dog. One of them is I put something tempting out front, and I have the people back up and just jiggle the leash lightly with their fingers, not jerking or not correcting the dog, just jiggling. And when the dog looks back, I have them mark that, praise it, feed it. So I call it head turns. Why we're doing that is not only is that making the dog soft to the leash and teaching the dog how to look away from a distraction, all those technical things, but it is also in any social animal, whoever gets looked at the most is the one who's in charge at that moment. So if I create more eye contact from the dog to the human, the dog will start seeing the human as someone in the leadership role without having to do any ridiculous and unnecessary, may I say, dominance or force or any of that stuff.
Like
you can
spanking the dog or yelling at the dog or anything. Yeah.
No, nothing you couldn't get at the Y in 1983. We can do better. We can do more. So by adjusting the eye contact and the attention, things start to have ripple effects from there. I don't have to discuss that with the client for the dog to start adjusting accordingly and to be more responsive and more focused to the client.
Okay. And then whenever the dog does become more responsive or that relationship becomes more appropriate, for you, you can tell that right away because of how the dog is responding.
Yes. Yep. And it's very easy to ask the clients to do. I think of training as small unemotional red lights, big emotional green lights. Mm-hmm. So I don't pay attention to the negatives, but I do have them do something that causes the behavior we want, and then they focus on that. And so people are very willing to focus on the praise and the reward part of it. They're totally in on that. That's easy buy-in.
Oh yeah. Positive reinforcement. Great.
Right. Positive buy-in.
Makes me think of clicker training.
Yes. Yeah. But there's a downside to clicker training, which is why I don't clicker train.
You gotta carry the clicker around with you everywhere and treats around.
There's part of that, but I think it has a damaging biochemistry problem.
Oh really?
Because what is the point of winning in a group? Status change. So if you raise a puppy and say, you win, you win, you win, you win, you win. Imagine if you raised a child and you gave them a quarter for every decent thing they did. You never hugged them. You never kissed them. You never praised them. You never did social interaction. You simply told them, this relationship is entirely transactional. What do you get?
Okay, so
you
for you, it feels like that becomes a very transactional relationship.
It becomes transactional, and I find it hardens the dog socially. I'll see more aggression from dogs that have been strictly, and I'll get lots of hate mail. So my smart puppy at Gmail, send it to me, tell me I'm ridiculous.
Well,
but
actually,
I've seen it for so
actually
many
the
years.
Research, while it's on humans, is actually very much behind what you're saying.
Oh, interesting.
I mean, this is research that's done in the 80s, 90s. I think there's even been more research done on this as recently as like 2010. If not currently, it's pretty common for different colleges to do this type of thing with people, mm-hmm. where the more and more that people get paid, as you're getting paid more, your
mm-hmm.
intrinsic value of wanting to do the work that you love to do actually goes down.
Oh, yeah.
So there's wonderful research. I cannot remember it off the top of my head,
I remember
but
that
it had to
puzzle.
Do with, yeah, well, it had to do with puzzles. Mm-hmm. There's one with, what I was thinking was artwork. So kids that love to do artwork,
mm-hmm.
parent would start paying them just like a dollar to go and do art. And the kids liked it a lot at first, like, okay, I'm getting paid for it. But slowly over time, especially as you started to increase the amount that you paid them, they liked art less and less because it became, like you said, transactional. And now I'm not doing this because I like it. Now I'm doing this because I'm getting paid. Yeah. So I'm doing the behavior because I'm getting a treat.
Yes.
And that's why I'm doing it. I'm not actually doing it because you want me to or because you're the leader.
The internal motivation or any of those things. And also, as you're promoted, and I think they did this with CEOs. I know they've done it with military. But as you're promoted, your oxytocin levels tend to fall because you need to make different sorts of decisions. So I find the dogs are less tail waggy, less soft, less social, more pushy. And I remember years ago, I was talking to another trainer who shall remain nameless, whose demo dog, 5-year-old dog, his own dog, got up and walked away. And he called the dog, and the dog didn't even drop an ear in his direction. Because one of the problems with clicker work is the dog will, if the smart dogs will quickly assess, is what I'm doing more or less interesting than the biscuit I'm about to get? And if it's more interesting, you've lost them and you've got absolutely nothing to draw on.
Or they don't have the clicker in their hand.
I think that's happened with my kids too.
Yeah. It happens with everybody.
Are you providing too much positive reinforcement?
That's me.
But, and that doesn't mean that if you're not using positive, that you're being somehow mean or emotionally whatever. My rule is it's predictable, it's controllable, it's not emotionally overwhelming. As long as it's all those things, then it's not abusive. If it is unpredictable, uncontrollable, and emotionally overwhelming, then we've gone to the dark side and we need to come back. But I'm not a fan. For some shy dogs, I'll absolutely use the clicker so I can adjust for lower oxytocin, less and more confidence. So I'll absolutely use it. But for dogs that want to be pets and in a social situation, I'm very leery because I don't want to lose the social connection, which is why people got the dogs in the first place.
It seems like, I mean, this is just my assessment of having gone through clicker training.
Mm-hmm.
You do it just to establish the behaviors and you quickly work away from it.
In my new world.
Yeah, and provide different types of support for them to do different things. Now, I am not by any means a dog expert, and my dogs have all kinds of issues. Not with listening to me or anything like that. But they're just really socially awkward around other dogs.
That's funny.
My dog is perfect.
Of course. Yay. I'm so glad I met her. So glad.
Takes after her own, right?
Exactly.
So I'm actually really curious. Whenever, this is probably a weird question.
I doubt it.
What types of people do you feel like tend to have dogs?
Oh, everybody. Mm-hmm. Absolutely everybody. Because who doesn't love some unconditional love? And when I was doing my thesis, I did a whole bunch of quantitative stuff, which I thought would be the most important. And one little qualitative question, is your dog important to you and why? I got reams of stuff, mostly from women. Reams. Guys
like
would say,
why their
yes,
dog
it
is important.
Why it's important. And what was interesting to me is women said, some of the things they said is, even when I'm angry and even when I don't look my best. So, right, when they're most socially unacceptable, the dog accepted them. The men said, even if I don't throw the ball very well, and even when I've had a bad day at work, my dog loves me. So they're a refuge from whatever social pressures or judgment we may feel we're getting. The dog loves us regardless. And, you know, who doesn't want a
piece of
that?
So what you're saying is that everybody should get a dog.
I'm saying everybody who wants a dog should get the right dog. Because now dogs are being prescribed by doctors for depression and general health, which is all wonderful. But if you don't want a dog, then please don't get a dog. It's not the answer for everything.
Just like a kid. If you
just
don't
like
want a kid or if you don't want to get married.
Right. Just don't go out and do it.
Don't. Yeah.
No, please.
I'm dying to know, and I assume everyone else listening is what kinds of things. Like, you're not going into the house and abruptly changing the dynamic and doing, like, intense therapy with these people.
No,
you're
no.
going in and basically working with what you have.
Yes.
But I'm just dying to know what kind of dynamics you pick up on that, like, certain types of, and then, like, what behaviors the dogs typically have, like, generally speaking.
All right. Well, years ago, I went in, and the 3-year-old was standing on a counter throwing stuff at me. this tells me I have very little chance with the dog. Right?
They can't control the child.
If this is acceptable behavior for whatever reason in the household, it's unlikely I'm going to get anything that I consider to be acceptable behavior going with the dog. So that's a classic example. But sure, I can see couples dynamics very clearly on how they coach or criticize, depending on how they tend to go about it. And I throw myself right in the middle and say, as long as I'm here, I'll be the one directing. You've got to live with each other later. Let me say the tough stuff. So, yeah, but everybody's family is both unique and very much the same. We're all trying to just get along. But yes, parenting styles, relationship styles, and of course what people say about their dog tells me what their lens is. So the puppy chews a shoe. One person will say the dog's being spiteful because they're angry at me because I left them. Somebody else will say I didn't exercise them enough, so he was just bored. Someone else will say he's a normal puppy. Someone else will say because he's got dominance, just, you know, whatever. But whatever they tell me guides me in how I frame.
That's their worldview.
It's their worldview, so that guides me onto how I frame the information. It'll be exactly the same information to all those people, but I'll frame it differently so that they can hear it better.
I think one of the cool things is, so like I work with a lot of couples, primarily a couples therapist. So one of the interesting things is, I never thought to ask this during my assessment, but like, hey, do you have a dog? How do you treat your dog? Or what are some things that you say to your dog or anything? That could actually be something that's very informative for me to give me a very quick view into their own internal world.
And you'll see where the pain points are, because there are many spouses that would love to get the attention the dog gets.
Oh, I've had couples that have talked about
yeah.
that.
I can...
They're like, oh, he is just so stone-faced towards me, doesn't show me anything. But whenever he sees the dog, he will get down on all fours.
Yes.
Like,
and you can talk about those feelings.
Oh, yeah.
I've noticed we have a blended family at my house. And so I have two stepdaughters, and then they're older, and then we have the two little boys. And with the dogs, I have noticed historically, like, a very polarized approach with both of us, honestly, with my husband and I. But as our family blends more, so does how we treat the dogs.
Yes.
It is so interesting to watch from a clinical perspective. Now, Kyle is very accepting of Piper, and will actually throw the ball with her and things like that.
Right.
And vice versa. I'm willing to give Spanky some time of the day.
And all that. But I think for men, actually, it's a safe place. In a culture that has not traditionally, it's better than it was, but a culture certainly for my age and over, and I'm coming up on 60, the men weren't supposed to exhibit emotions, but they could with the dog. So I'll often see men that are very open with the dog, very loving, will throw the ball, will do stuff with the dog, because that's a place they can finally relax and be themselves and not be judged.
An emotional refuge.
I can't tell you how many stories you hear, or how many stories I get with different couples where they might be like, I have not seen him show any emotion, but whenever the dog died, I saw him cry for the first time. And you're like... Oh, well, yeah, that makes sense. Like,
the men get kneecapped by that more than the women. The men are just ripped up about the death of the dog. And that has been for my whole career. And they don't see it coming the same way. But when you go back and do Roger's therapeutic relationship, it's a dog. Right? It's mutual, it's emotional simpatico, it's mutual respect, it's wanting to do things, it's positivity. And when I read that, I'm like, wait a minute, that's a Labrador. It's any Labrador. So I think that they very much provide a therapeutic relationship for anybody in the household that's open to it and wants it.
It'd be cool to use that in therapy and teach clients how to generalize the experience they have with their dog to other humans.
Right, but we've burnt it, right? By the time people get to therapy, the human beings have burnt that. The dogs never have.
Right.
Right? So it's a risk with people, not a risk with the dog.
That'd be an interesting clinical intervention where I don't have any type of therapy dog with me, but if they're So I do emotionally focused therapy. So I actually have the couples turn and talk to each other about some of their emotional experiences that they're having. And it'd be interesting because there's sometimes where I ask them to turn and talk to each other and they're not there yet.
Right.
So like I kind of get ahead of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, then we go back and we cut it a little bit, or we make it a little bit softer. It'd be interesting if the dog was there, be like, well, can you
talk
say
to
that?
The dog.
Yeah. Can
yes.
you talk to the dog? Can you say that to the dog?
Yes.
And I'd be like, sure.
That's a really funny
moment
in therapy.
That's low risk.
Yeah, it's low risk, yeah. And people be very real. I pay attention to how people praise.
Mm-hmm.
I'll never leave you. I'll never leave you. Or you're so smart. You're so smart. So that's all information. I always say you're the best dog because we were a very competitive family. I'm like, really? Even my dog has to be the best. I think I could back off on that one a little bit.
Oh, so this is the real reason that you went into the field like you have, is because you wanted your dog to be the best. Oh, okay.
Yeah, well, that didn't work out, by the way.
I don't need to see your dog to understand your family dynamic.
That's right.
You don't need to see my family to understand
my dog dynamic.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I notice as I'm listening to you guys, I say Piper's the perfect dog, and recently, like a few days ago, my 11-year-old was like, I feel like I have to be perfect. And I'm like, you know what? I feel like I have to be perfect too. And this comes from this other place.
Mm-hmm.
And it like gives me all of this information.
Right.
And so him and I had a very
It's better
healing...
than you having the conversation. You do have to be perfect.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But don't say that to
yes,
your child,
you're right.
Please.
You do have to be perfect. And
yeah.
So does Piper. And she's better than you.
Oh, nice. Nice. But what I realized is that we tend to seek out what we feel we did not get.
Right, yeah.
Right.
So
that, again, gives me insight into what could be workable for me going in with that person or with that family, how I could be helpful.
And from a clinician's perspective, I see the relationship with a dog as a bunch of clues to
yes.
use in therapy.
Yes, absolutely.
So I'm just curious. So, like, let's say that I'm someone that's listening to this.
Yes.
And I'm like, wow, this Sarah gal sounds like she really knows what she's talking about. My dog is like 10 times a 10 ways crazy or whatever.
Right.
What are some things that I'd be seeing or noticing with my dog or that's happening just kind of in my family dynamic that would be like, okay, I should probably give Sarah a call?
Well, if there's an ongoing pain point. If I come in and the dog's standing on the table and people don't care the dog's standing on the table, then I don't care that the dog's standing on the table. I'm not one of these people that says, you've got to do X, Y, Z. But if they say, barking at the window 500 times a day is making me crazy, then that's the thing we adjust. If I don't have to adjust other things, then we just adjust that behavior. If it's aggression or shyness, then I often have to do more adjustments to the entire relationship for the dog to understand how to let go of those patterns. But ongoing pain point.
So if it's ongoing pain point with the dog, that's when they're like, okay, I should give Sarah a call. And she'll come in and help me do some of these different adjustments.
Yes.
And while she's there, she'll kind of get an idea of what goes on with her. Internal family.
And not judging. My family's not perfect. I'm not perfect. Totally not judgy. Just trying to be as quickly
that,
helpful
it's just
as I could
information.
Be.
Well, I
it's
think that's important because if I'm someone that's sitting here listening to this and I'm trying really hard, like most people are, they're trying
yeah.
to figure out what is going on in my life. Why are things like this in my home or anything
yes.
like that? Then I could be sitting here listening to this and be like, oh, well, how do I treat my dog? What are some
mm-hmm.
things that I say? Oh, well, what does that mean
right.
about, what does that mean about the relationship? What does that mean about how I react, right? So if I go to my dogs every day and like, you know, the first thing that happens is whenever I get home, I drop my bag
yeah.
and I get on the ground and I'm
yeah.
like, I'm petting them and stuff. And like, oh, I love you. I love
uh-huh.
you. I love you. And then I go to my wife and I'm like, oh, hey, babe.
Yeah, yeah. exactly.
You know,
well, then that would make you typical.
Well, then that might mean like, for me that like, oh, it's safer for me to be that way
yes.
with the dogs than it is my wife. And that might explain some of her and my behaviors or issues that we're having. So what I'm saying is
yeah.
if I'm sitting here listening to this, all of a sudden I'm like, oh, well, I could have a lot of clues that are really easily accessible that I didn't think were clues before.
And I will say I do my best to greet my partner when he comes home As a dog would, I put down what I'm doing. I run to the door. I give him a big hug.
Rub his
I
face.
Welcome him home. But not rub his face, but just I try to show that I am thrilled that he's home.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I could sit there at the sink and continue to wash dishes and say hi over my shoulder, but it takes me 30 seconds to go, I'm so happy you're home. You know, it's great to see you. I love you. And I have to say that sort of sets the evening off on a nice tone.
It does.
It does.
So how can people find you?
MySmartPuppy.com. MySmartPuppy.com, MySmartPuppy at Gmail, MySmartPuppy on Wikipedia, whatever. You'll find me.
Cool. What if your dog isn't very smart? No, I'm just messing
with you. I have only had one dog who I think was neurologically damaged who I thought wasn't very bright. The rest of them basically are working the system. So people say he's not very
working
bright.
Working the system. I love that.
He's working the system. If you'll say sit, 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 and then give him a cookie when he sits, then he thinks the command is sit, 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 sit. He's not being difficult. You trained him.
Mm-hmm.
But if you only gave cookies after he sat when you said, Bongo, sit, and he sits, give him a cookie then. You don't give him a cookie after sit, 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 sit. You just tell him, you know, good dog. Pretty soon he'll be sitting faster. He's not dumb. He just, that's the system he understands.
Dogs are always just trying the best that they can.
Can, yes.
To get you to love and care about them.
Yes.
They're always just trying the best that they can.
That's right.
And I think that I think it's easy. Gosh, what's the word I'm looking for? It's so easy for us to be parsimonious. I think that's the word I'm looking for.
Well, we just don't realize.
We're giving them all kinds of attributes that are that we feel like. Oh, like yeah, they are like little humans. They are not.
No.
They are not like little humans.
No.
Your dog is not spiteful towards you.
No, they're confused. They may be stressed. They will often go to things that smell like you when they're stressed. That'll be your chair, your remote, especially if you snack while you use your remote, your eyeglasses, your billfold, but none of that spite. That just happens to be stuff that smells the most like you, so that's what they go to comfort themselves with.
I think that's so cool to think about that. Like different ways that, because we'll have tension that shows up in households and being able to see, okay, where does the dog go? Because they can pick up on it.
Like a sponge. Oh my goodness, yes.
I mean, evolutionarily, so I've always been fascinated with dogs because we as human beings have kind of changed their evolutionary path. And they are more in tune with us than any other animal on the planet. And
yep.
A lot of times even more than we're in tune with other people. So it'd be interesting, like whenever I walk into my home and after about a half an hour of me being there, where are my dogs at? What are they doing? You know, do they do certain things that kind of let me know they sense the tension in the home? They're confused about what's going on. They don't know what to do or
yes.
anything because they're not getting any type of direction.
Right. They're just guessing, but who they hang out around, maybe the person that's the most needy at that moment.
Oh, don't tell me, because my dogs follow me around the house all the time.
Well, but they may not. Everyone may be fine. I mean, you can't take it as a generality, but if there's something abnormal, like they normally follow you around, but all of a sudden they're hanging out with your wife, maybe she had a bad day, or maybe something's going on that you guys don't yet know. I had the client say, why is my dog barking at my bedroom door? He slept outside my bedroom door for years. Why now? And I said, is there something going on with your job or is there something going on with your health? And the answer was yes, with her health. Well, the dog knows that.
Yeah.
I've had several dogs do cancer, diagnose cancer. So, yes.
All right, Sarah. Well, this has been very informative for me. I know, especially working with couples and also because, like, I'm a dog owner, I'm a dog lover and everything. So I really appreciate you coming and talking to us. I really... really appreciate the insight on how oxytocin levels can be changed and adjusted. That is not something that I would have ever thought of. So I appreciate like you letting me know about that.
You're very welcome. Nobody's talking about it in my field yet either. This, as far as I know, I'm the only person who adjusts brain chemistry as my profession with dogs, but it works very well.
That is so cool. That is so cool. Again, thank you for coming on here. Kristen, thank you for introducing
me. It was
me,
awesome.
Sarah, and we hope that you guys find this helpful. And, you know, I think what's cool about this is because you two are connected, it'll be interesting to see what kind of stories you have with your adventures with Piper and your relationship adjustment and and everything that, like you said, you see how it changes in the household too as you guys become
blended.
More and more blended and everything with how you guys treat the dogs. So thank you guys for listening to this episode. We hope that you guys enjoyed it, and we look forward to next time. I believe that we're going to be continuing our trauma talk. So we'll talk to all of you then.
Thank you for listening to our show. This podcast is designed to provide accurate and reliable information, and those that appear on the show are all licensed professionals in the area of mental health counseling. We are in no way rendering legal or medical advice, only information to help serve you better in making decisions in your life. If you need a professional, you should find one. Music you are listening to is called Lobby Time, and that is by Kevin MacLeod and licensed through Creative Commons.